Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guest today is the senior minister of All Souls Unitarian Church in Tulsa, Reverend Marlon Lavenhar. As a leader in the city's progressive religious community, he's been one of the leaders in the Tulsa Metropolitan Ministry's push for reparations for direct survivors of the 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre. Currently, TMM is pushing Tulsa congregations to raise $100,000, $1,000 a congregation, for symbolic reparations, while pushing government institutions to also take action. In addition, Lavenhar is an amateur cartoonist, and through the month of May, heading up to the centennial commemoration, he'll be publishing a daily political cartoon in the Black Wall Street Times, making the case for reparations now. Titled, Is the World on Fire?, Lavenhar combines original cartoons along with cartoons that use actual archival photographs from the race massacre to make potent statements on how the city's various institutions were complicit in both the violence and the effects of its aftermath, depicting some of the outrageous claims and justifying the violence from city and elected leaders, the courts, law enforcement, and other institutions, including the city's religious institutions, as well as noting the losses suffered by the Greenwood community. He joins me today on Studio Tulsa. Marlon Lavenhar, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Rich, I'm delighted. I've been listening to you for 20 years. I'm just so glad to be able to talk to you.
Well, you know, I just discovered a new talent about you, that you've been an amateur cartoonist for some time. And what spurred that?
Well, you know, I used to draw cartoons when I was in high school. And my dad's actually an amateur cartoonist, and he's the one who inspired me way back when. And then I stopped doing it in my early 20s and just got busy going to seminary, starting my career as a minister, all of that. And then I picked it up a couple of years ago, I think in the midst of everything that's happening in our country, the reckoning with racial justice, the Trump presidency, and all of those different things. I needed an outlet.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've heard you preach before, and you've never been shy about expressing opinions. Is there something you can do as a cartoonist that you can't really say as a minister?
Absolutely. In part because I'm not cartooning professionally, so I'm not doing this as a reflection of my church or my ministry directly. And so I'm mostly putting things up on my private Facebook page and Instagram. And so I feel more free to talk about political topics than I would in the pulpit. Because I try, even though I take on issues in the pulpit, I certainly don't take on any direct politicians and any kind of electoral politics or those types of things. And the cartooning allows me to share some of my opinions on those things in a way that isn't in conflict with my ministry on Sunday morning.
Well, tell us a little bit about how this series for Black Wall Street Times, Is the World on Fire? It's a series of 31 cartoons that's running this month. How did this come about?
Well, I started to draw some cartoons and had some ideas about what happened in 1921 here. And so I started to just doodle some cartoons. And these weren't ha-ha-ha funny cartoons, but cartoons that really try to prick the conscience of the person and to inform people and engage people with some of the issues that we often don't talk about, especially in cross-racial conversations. I have the benefit of having a congregation that has a lot of African-Americans as well as a lot of white folks. And so with the life that I'm living and the people I'm around, I'm hearing interesting conversations in different pockets, but not always people talking together. And I thought, well, this could be a fun way to raise some of those issues in a way that would cross the cultural barriers that often keep us from having honest conversations.
Now, I haven't seen all of the 31 cartoons, and I guess nobody will see them until the end of the month, but you are tackling issues head on. From the very first one is a very poignant cartoon, which is the title cartoon, Is the World on Fire? And it shows a young boy holding a parent's hand as I assume his world is exploding,
crumbling around him. That's right. I'm really trying to take on particularly the impact of the massacre on children, which we often don't talk about or think about, and the role of religion in the events as well, and in the aftermath, because that was a big one, and we really don't think close, and especially in a city like Tulsa that is so religious, a lot of church-going folks, a lot of churches, and we don't think about what role did religion play. And so that's a topic of these cartoons as well.
Well, why don't you shed some light on the role of religion in this massacre and in the aftermath?
Well, okay, so an example, I have one cartoon that's called Church Across the Tracks.
Yes.
June 5th, 1921, the Sunday after the massacre. And on the one side of the tracks, you have the white preacher who's preaching, and then on the other side, of course, the African-American preacher who's preaching. In whispering into the ear of the white preacher, you see this cartoon devil character. And because the preacher's saying, and I take actual words from an actual sermon preached in one of our pulpits in Tulsa, but it's a reflection of many sermons that we have documented from that time, and it's justifying the killing and the destruction and the looting by white people. It's blaming the massacre on African Americans and reinforcing inequality. So I have, that's obviously not coming from God, that's not coming from Jesus. So I have the devil is the one whispering in his ear, and then across the tracks, the black preacher is preaching, and Jesus is whispering in his ear, and he's preaching the words, "Forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do." And he's trying to comfort his people. And with each of these cartoons, Rich, I do a commentary afterwards. So the idea is that somebody sees the cartoon, maybe they understand the context or not, and then hopefully we'll read a couple of paragraphs that will explain a little bit more about what's happening. And that's when I get a chance to explain. These are the actual words from a sermon. They were preached in a number of churches, white churches at the time. Because you think about that, these were pulpits where people were supposedly trying to preach and uplift the word of God with people. And it was actually, we could say, evil instead of godly, certainly not divine words talking about inequality, justifying murder and looting and destruction. And so we don't think about that. And because what happened was the churches influenced the people and made it so that people did not feel that it was necessary to repay it, since it was the fault of the black community, according to these preachers, that there wasn't a strong will for reparations. If the preachers would have gotten into their pulpits and said, "This is terrible, it's a stain on our city, we need to love our neighbors, let's raise some money," because a number of those churches were raising money at the time. This is all pretty well documented in Randy Crable's book. And so I just think that's a really critical piece, because it cost the inequality that was expressed in the churches, the moral hub of the community, really led to, we passed 18 Jim Crow laws between the early 1900s all the way through 1957, which really kept African Americans from being able to build wealth and get a fair education and a lot of other things. So there were a lot of systemic things put in place legally, and the churches were not on the side of justice in this case. So it's a long way of describing a short little cartoon. And maybe that's what I could say, Rich, is that the nice thing about the cartoons are I could write an essay about the role of religion in the 1921 massacre, but I don't think very many people would read it. But with this medium, I can post it on social media and people will share it, and they share it and they'll comment on it. So it really is creating dialogue, and it is being shared. And I think that's the hope of this, is that people share them and talk about them, and we move past some of the silence around these issues.
Yeah, I guess the one that appeared as we speak today is one that shows a police lineup, and it's called Cold Case 1921 to 2021. And it gets into the idea that, you know, there's no investigation to who perpetrated the massacre. And we see these profiles, and there is obviously a law enforcement profile. There is a Klan profile. There's a vigilante profile. There is a judge profile. There's also a clergy profile.
Right. Yeah, I really wanted to say with this cartoon that there's been no investigation. There was a crime against humanity, one of the worst in our nation's history, and there's been no investigation. Nobody's been brought to account. And the thing is that you can't cause a massacre, destroy 35 blocks of businesses and homes, loot them, kill possibly up to 300 people, and their bodies still not found, many of them. You can't do all that and then cover it up for decades where nobody talked about it and it wasn't taught in schools. You can't do all of that and then blame the victims and then not pay the victims any insurance claims or any reparations on behalf of the city, even though that many of the, at least 300 of those who were doing the destruction were deputized, sworn deputized by the city. And that no reparations. You can't get away with all of that unless you have a lot of people conspiring to make that happen. You can't hide a massacre for decades without the school system being involved, without the media being complicit, and certainly there were court cases, clergy we just talked about. So there were a lot of folks involved in this. It wasn't just a random mob of what we think of as these sort of redneck people who were prejudiced, who came out and caused this destruction. This is something that crosses a lot of the socioeconomic roles of leadership within our city. And that's the reckoning and the conversation that I think we need to have if we're going to be honest about this, and certainly if we're going to talk about reparations.
You know, one of the first cartoons in the series was Tulsa's Shadow since 1921, which shows the Golden Driller, which of course did not exist in 21, but has still become a symbol of our city. And his shadow is that same outline of what I would call the armed vigilante, if you will, the deputized citizen that ran amok.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. I just, in one quick picture, I wanted people to see that glance, that what we show, the face of Tulsa, the driller man, or whatever symbols that we show that we're all really proud of, and we should be. But behind it is this shadow that's lurking, which is what happened in 1921, and it's only lurking there as a shadow because we haven't really fully dealt with it. We haven't talked about it. We haven't told the truth. We haven't taught it in our schools, and we certainly haven't repaid or done enough to help the survivors and their descendants. I was with a Mother Fletcher just 2 hours ago as we're doing this interview. I came back to do the interview. She turned 107 yesterday. She's a survivor. She was 7 years old. She recounted this story to me a few hours ago. Her mom running into her bedroom at night, waking her and her brother up, saying, "Get dressed. We need to go right now." And they were burning down her house. And she said, "White people are killing and destroying everyone. We have to get out of here." And she still remembers it like it was yesterday. She can't talk about it without tearing up. Mm. So, again, that she was a child then, and I want to talk about that. And I want us to think about, as a city, what can we do? We really have not taken. And the other, I'll tell you another thing, Rich, that some of the cartoons that are coming out also talk about urban renewal.
Yes.
Because what a lot of people don't know is that despite not getting insurance money and not getting any money from the city or the state, the survivors rebuilt Greenwood. It actually became bigger and better. It was deemed Black Wall Street after the massacre, after the rebuild. So it was truly a very strong, vibrant community for a long time. People don't realize that. They think it was destroyed then, and it's been destroyed ever since. And then urban renewal came in, and we put in these highways, and we put them right through the center of the Greenwood Business District, and we truly destroyed once and for all Greenwood with urban renewal. That was 1971, being planned in the late 60s. And so that's a critical piece. They could have, there's designs, they could have moved the highway even a block south, and it would not have gone right through and destroyed the business district. And then in was it 1991, when UCAT, when we started the university system there, the city came in and bought up a whole bunch of homes and a bunch of properties and built the university system. So now there's no way to rebuild Greenwood, even if the people wanted to. And the ongoing nature of the takeover of Greenwood and the destruction of this historic community is something, again, that we don't talk about.
Now, your cartoon that has been released already shows a fat cat, if you will, saying what we couldn't destroy with fire, we'll wreck with a highway. But it's also that sort of, and this is common to African-American communities across the country. The interstate highway system went for the cheapest land, and the cheapest land was in the communities of color.
Right.
And it was almost like, we're going to save this community by destroying it.
Right. I mean, I go to visit Mount Zion Baptist Church down there, one of the churches that was burnt down. They had a 30-year mortgage they took out to build the church. They built it. It got burned down that same year, and they decided, we're going to stay. We're going to pay off this 30-year mortgage and rebuild, which they did. An amazing church, amazing group of people. Well, now, if you go visit them, they have the highway an overhead highway coming right on one side of their building, and then it's just an endless parking lot for OSU Tulsa on the other side, and they're just this church right in the middle of both of those things. Still active, still doing a great job, but it's just surrounded by concrete.
My guest today is Reverend Marlon Lavenhar. He's a senior minister at All Souls Unitarian Church. He's also an amateur cartoonist, and the Black Wall Street Times has commissioned him to do a series of 31 cartoons during the month of May leading up to the centennial of the 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre, in a series of cartoons looking at the struggle for reconciliation and reparations. And all of the cartoons have a banner either at the top or the bottom which say reparations now. The cartoons do make a case for that. Why is that so important today?
You know, reparations is something that our country has paid in a number of different instances throughout history. So we don't have a problem with reparations as a nation, at least we haven't historically. And it's been bipartisan. It was Ronald Reagan that voted to give reparations to those Japanese who were interred during World War II. And so it's been a bipartisan issue. In fact, we gave reparations to Confederate soldiers after the Civil War. So we didn't have a problem. These folks attacked our Union and tried to destroy and break our nation apart in defense of slavery. And this country paid reparations to them and the veterans and their widows for a long time. And so there's a lot of instances, whether it was paying reparations to Jews after World War II and some others, that this nation has done. And there's some instances of towns and cities like Rosewood in Florida, and just last week, Evanston, Illinois, decided to use their marijuana tax money to pay reparations. And so we're seeing it happening, and it certainly could happen here in Tulsa. But when the state, employees of the city do damage, I mean, even if an employee driving a lawnmower bumped into my car and scratched or dented my car, the city would pay to repair my car, because that's what the city does when its employees, those in its service, do damage. When a deputy kills somebody in a way that is, you know, not legal or not expected, then the city pays, because that was a mistake that was made by an employee. So we had 300-plus deputized citizens, white citizens, who enacted this, and yet the city has done nothing to repay. And the gap of wealth is just enormous, and the gap of health is enormous between African Americans and white people in this city, or people in the southern part of the city and North Tulsa. And so those are things that are vestiges of this history that we have not dealt with.
Yeah. The Tulsa Metropolitan Ministry, I know you've been involved with this as well, they're trying to raise a symbolic amount for reparations, $100,000 for the remaining direct survivors of the race massacre. What is important about this particular effort at this particular time?
What's important about doing what Tulsa Metropolitan Ministries is doing is that congregations across many denominations in this city are being asked to give $1,000. We're looking for 100 congregations to give $1,000, and many have been doing it, so that we could raise $100,000 from 100 congregations on the 100th anniversary to show that this is a moral imperative, that it's the right thing to do. There's always a question, is it legal? Are we legally bound to do it? Well, that's not the question the churches are asking. The churches are asking, is it the right thing to do? Is it the morally right thing to do for the good of the community, for the healing of the community? And so these are congregations of different denominations and religious backgrounds saying, yes, it is. And we're putting some money down, enough that it's significant to do that, to say this is the right thing to do, with the hope that the city leadership, the members of those congregations who are involved in politics and public life will recognize this is the morally right thing to do, and hopefully we will set that example. A counterexample, I'll say, to the conversation we had at the beginning of the interview about the role of many of the white churches in the aftermath of the massacre.
Before we leave Is the World on Fire, these series of 31 cartoons you're doing for the Black Wall Street Times, I have to ask about several of the cartoons where you're using archival photographs. There's one called I Can't Breathe, which shows a archival photo of the fires with a young man slumped down, head bowed. And of course, that phrase now has so much more resonance in 2021. And another one which shows a burning church. I believe it's either Mount Zion or the Vernon AME Church.
I think it's Mount Zion.
Yeah. And it uses an archival photograph. Again, it's this justification that in scrawled on the photograph itself, it was charging that the black churches were stockpiling weapons, which was spurious. Tell me about using these photographs as a basis for the cartoons.
So many of these photographs, Rich, were turned into postcards that were then sent by white Tulsans all over the country, maybe other parts of the world, to kind of brag, it seems like, about what happened, how they destroyed the black community. And so you see this writing, like the one you mentioned with Mount Zion Church burning, and it says at the bottom, burning a church where munitions were being stockpiled during the riot of 1921 in Tulsa. And the thing is, there were no munitions being stockpiled in churches, but how does a white Christian person justify burning down another church? And the way they do it is say, well, they were stockpiling weapons in the church. And so what I try to do is create a counter narrative to the narrative that they were portraying in these postcards by drawing cartoons on top of the postcards and adding some different commentary. My favorite one in that series, it's a postcard that has black men being marched with hands in the air through the streets of Greenwood, being taken into detention centers. And in this cartoon, I drew on top of the postcard and the photograph, because I could do this with a cartoon, so I have a conversation between two of them. And one of them is in a veteran, World War I veteran's uniform. And the other one is saying, he's looking at him saying, "What? Remind me again why you fought for America?" And the soldier is saying, freedom from tyranny, I thought. And they're looking back, and there's this vigilante character with rifle at their back saying, keep moving. It's a way of having a very short picture and a few words that convey a message that these are folks who fought for our country, for our freedom from tyranny, and yet they were being terrorized in our city.
I was really struck by the burning churches because, as you well know, despotic governments around the world, when the church turns against them, they will often use something like that to order reprisals when the church turns against the regime.
Right, right. Powerful.
My guest today is Reverend Marlon Lavenhar, senior minister at All Souls Unitarian Church. His series of cartoons that are being published in the Black Wall Street Times through the month of May is titled, Is the World on Fire? While I have you, I know you've been a part of a group of clergy and others that have protested House Bill 1775, which now has been signed by the governor, which will prohibit learning about systemic racism if it makes students feel uncomfortable or feel guilt. It also bans mandatory gender and sexual diversity training or counseling at state higher education facilities. Do you have a reaction to this bill passing in this month, at this particular time, just weeks before the commemoration?
Yeah, it's, I think, a very damaging piece of legislation, especially being passed as we are approaching the commemoration of a crime against humanity, of what's being described now as a massacre of people and that kind of destruction, which requires us having some difficult conversations about the role of racism and some of our ancestors and some of our politicians. And if we're going to really talk about these things and teach our children about them, we have to talk about some hard truths. And this legislation is being put out there to really limit our ability to have those kinds of conversations. I'll give you an example. Someone was asking me, the governor said when he signed this, he said, I'm signing this because no race is superior to any other race, which I absolutely agree with. So then we have to ask the governor, then why, on every positive social indicator that we have that we can measure, like wealth and health and others, white people score so much higher than people of any other racial background? If indeed all races are equal and none are superior to the other, how come white people keep landing on top over and over and over again and getting most of the wealth and most of the goods of the society? And there's only two answers to that question. Either you believe white people are superior, and I know there are people who believe it, that's called racist. That's a racist view. Or the system was created that way. And when you talk about 18 Jim Crow laws over a number of decades in this state, you know that we created laws to make it that way so that white people were benefited and others were not. And so these are things we have to talk about, and they will make people uncomfortable. And I'm very disappointed in our governor and our legislature for passing this bill, which seems to be kind of a pandering effort, but it's going to have some real impacts.
We keep talking about reconciliation and finding reconciliation. Is it possible to have reconciliation without discomfort?
I don't think so. One of the cartoons that's coming out in the series soon, it shows the Tower of Reconciliation at the John Hope Franklin Park. And that tower starts with slavery and the Trail of Tears, and it kind of works its way up through the massacre here in 1921, the Civil Rights Movement, and then eventually you get to the top where there's some reconciliation, and then at the top, liberation of everybody from all of this terrible prejudice. And the cartoon is really focused on the gap. It says, you know, where most white people think we are, where most white people in Tulsa think we are, and it's pointing to the point of reconciliation. And you've got this cartoon of this woman waving a flag, you know, yay us. And then and then you have where many other people in the community think we are, and it's pointed at a place, and it says truth-telling and repair. Other people in the community are waiting for us to get to. And that is well before you get to reconciliation. And it just outlines this gap we have right now about people who want to say, we're in reconciliation right now, when most people who've been harmed in this community from 1921 and onward are saying, no, I don't feel like we're reconciling. We're not there yet. There's a lot that we still need to tell, stories we need to tell, and work we need to do, and real repair, reparations, whatever you want to call it, that have to happen before it feels like we can get to reconciliation.
Well, these cartoons are a bit of truth-telling and repair. What's been the reaction so far from the community? Have you heard any reaction?
So far, the reaction has been mostly positive comments on social media as people post them and repost them. And so I spend a lot of time around people who are active doing this work, this kind of activism work in the community and working on reconciliation issues. So I'm getting a lot of positive response right now, but I imagine there's another shoe that will drop at some point.
Well, we hope that it's a very gentle, very kind and gentle shoe if it has to drop at all. Is The World on Fire? Is a series of 31 cartoons all this month. Reverend Lavenhar, thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, what a pleasure. Thank you, Rich.
Reverend Marlon Lavenhar is the senior minister at All Souls Unitarian Church. Is The World on Fire, a series of 31 cartoons he's done about the 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre and the struggle for reconciliation and reparations, appears in the Black Wall Street Times. He's also leading one of the efforts by the Tulsa Metropolitan Ministry to raise $100,000 for reparations for the remaining direct survivors of the Tulsa Race Massacre. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.